My name is Jordy Blaine, and I'm here to assist you while you listen to the Assist podcast. Our topics range from success, failure, health, life, and everything in between. I'm here to assist you in all that life has to offer.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Assist podcast. I am your host, Jordy Blaine. Today's guest, I have to say, right from the start of us trying to get her on the podcast, I was super drawn in because she is funny, she is witty, and I can tell that she's rolling her eyes. I can tell that she has a story that's going to just draw us in even more. So Carrie Silverman, welcome to the Assist podcast. How are you?
Good. Thank you, Jordy, for having me.
Of course.
I'm so glad we worked through and found a good tech solution.
Oh, I know. And I also have to add, Carrie and I are from a very similar area. She's from Sandpoint and I'm from Spokane. So that was another reason I was excited to connect, because you feel like a little piece of home already.
Oh, yeah. Like running into an acquaintance in like a foreign country, and maybe you didn't get along, but like you saw them at the grocery store a lot.
You know? Stick together. Yep.
Right. It feels like you're bonding over something, but like you really don't know each other that well.
Exactly. But I'm excited to find out.
Yeah. The Inland Northwest is, we're kind of a different little creature, you know. Yep. I mean, Spokane is so different than, you know, the West Coast of
totally.
Washington. Yes. And North Idaho is so different from the majority of our population is. I like to think of myself as Southern Canada.
Yes. I love it. Okay. Carrie, you're joining us from Sandpoint. Can you tell us though, like about how you grew up, where you grew up, kind of lead us up to where you are right now in your life?
Okay, I'll try to make that as quick as possible. We'll never get to the entrepreneurial part if I get too in depth. Okay, so I grew up North Idaho. I've actually lived here pretty much my whole life.
Amazing.
I left a couple of times and came back. One of those times was right when I turned 18 and I went down to Tucson, Arizona.
Amazing.
It was just like, I was like, I'm 18. I've got $200 and a ride.
Fly the coop. Yep.
Yeah, you know, just because that's kind of how I've lived my entire life. If I wasn't compelled to do something from like a internal or intrinsic motivation, I just kind of like skated through, and I didn't like putting effort into it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, like high school, I dropped out of high school. Okay. And that is primarily because I was getting A's and B's. And I only had to show up like 45% of the time.
Oh, yeah.
And in Idaho, they had just kind of enacted this thing where if you missed a certain amount of school, they took away your learning credits.
Okay.
And so they like threatened to do it and put me on a contract. And I'm like, it's just a piece of paper, right? Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of weird about like things like contract and credit. I'm like, concept. And like, I break this contract, like I'm not going to feel that bad, you know, about breaking like a school attendance contract. And so it was the last quarter of my sophomore year. So I was 15, but I was getting ready to turn 16 in June. And 16, you can drop out kind of on your own
terms.
Yeah, you can decide to do it. And your parents don't really have a lot of say other than like whatever normal parenting things, but you can sign yourself out of school.
Okay.
And so they had informed me that I had broken my contract and that they were taking away all of my credits from my freshman year and half the all the credits I had earned my sophomore year up till that point. And I was like, but I'm getting good grades. Why would you take those away from me? Like I've learned the information enough to have like the words on a paper that
to
say
be passing
that
and all the things. Yeah. Totally.
But it was like Idaho struggles with getting money into their schools, and it has to do with like how much they get paid and funded up north. I mean, North Idaho is so far from Boise, and that's where all the things are.
Yeah, so far. Yeah.
And I think that was just the strategy. Anyways, moving right along. They were like, well, it'll be really easy for you then to make all those credits up. And I said, or I can just not come back. So I got my GED that summer and I enrolled in college that for that fall. So
good.
I technically started college early.
You never needed them in the first place.
Well, yeah, because I, you know, it's about learning to learn, you know, and at a certain point, like, I don't like if I understand a concept, but I have no interest in doing the activity.
It's not going to transfer over.
Yeah, I just, it's like, okay, well, I understand this, but it's not my jam. So I'm not going to sit here and do like this repetition to try and memorize. And memorization has always been hard for me. Really good at conceptualizing, really bad at memorizing.
Gotcha.
So super high competency reading, but super low at my times tables.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So I started college, and the thing about college that was really interesting that inevitably made me drop that as well was that I got exposed to a couple of new, I guess, things that I didn't know I was interested in. Okay. And then also the one thing that I used to be able to really do well, I was actually failing in. So like I had English and I had like a D in that class and I could not like pull it together.
Yeah.
But I loved like the study skills class and I loved psych 101 and I loved like biology for the first time.
Okay.
Like, you know, like all these things. I'm like, wow, I didn't like know that I loved all these things that are, and then, you know, you're filling out like these stacks of FAFSA paperwork every semester, trying to get funding. And, and I was just like, oh, I don't think I want to continue on this path because I definitely don't want to be an elementary school teacher anymore, which is what I had like initially gotten my couple of grants for.
Sure.
And so I better not invest this time, money, energy, all these things into doing this thing that I might actually hate after 4 years.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, especially from my generation, I like to think of myself as an elder millennial. Because I mean, I really am. I was born in 83. And so, and my boyfriend's 5 years older than me. And it's funny because that 5 years kind of makes a difference with of work, for instance. But I just didn't see any point in investing a bunch of time and energy into something that I was going to hate.
I get it.
And I look around at so many people my age who have, you know, college debt and they're not even doing what they want, love. You know, went to college for. And then like what they went to college for, it turns out it's not what they love. And that's so disheartening to humans in general.
Yes.
A lack of meaning is one of the number one killers.
Yeah.
You know, in the world right now, lack of meaning.
Right.
And it was actually ramping up before COVID. And so COVID really
just exacerbated it
so much, so much. So yeah. So I dropped out of college too. And then, let's see, that was right around like, oh, so then after college, I took off to Arizona, then 9/11 happened and I came back home. Okay. And so I only like moved away from this area. Long story. long story longer, I moved back to this area and I've been here pretty much ever since.
Gotcha.
It's a interesting area to live because you have like some really uber rich that have their second homes, third homes, fourth homes.
Oh, yes.
And then you've got like, Ruby Ridge. You know,
that
happened relatively close. You had Richard Butler, who had his compound in Hayden. You know, just an interesting mix, interesting mix of people, all white.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. You know?
Yes. And so a lot of my experience has been around poverty as opposed to color when it comes to some sort of
adversity,
being held down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Being held down at some point. Seeing people struggle with the court systems. Once you get in here, you can't really get out.
Yeah.
It's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
So I actually grew up in the woods on 20 acres and I'm building out there now.
That's awesome.
I grew up no power, no running water. The whole thing, like just, I didn't have a TV until my parents split up when I was like 13.
Okay.
So
holy cow.
Yeah. So all of that. And then I came back home, worked up at the ski resort. So we've got a really great lake and a really great ski resort.
Oh, I'm obsessed with Schweitzer. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And so I worked up there as a lifty. I met my future baby's daddy / ex-husband. and we were together about 9 years and I had thought that I wanted to be maybe a stay-at-home mom. And then it turns out not so much.
You're like, never mind.
Yeah. Turns out I really need like conversation
space or see,
you know, and then, you know, and I look back knowing what I know now, if I had known it then, I probably would have enjoyed it more.
Gotcha.
I had this idea of failure. And, you know, because really I told myself that I had failed by not finishing high school.
Like, yeah,
I,
which is untrue.
I had my little, like thing
but
that
I get
would
it.
Say, you know, but at the same time, deep down on the inside, I didn't feel capable.
Sure.
I had this notion that even though I had these good grades, like I knew where my struggles were. And I knew that as the next 2 years of high school continued, I was going to struggle with like the grades. And so might as well quit while I was ahead, sort of.
You're like a cut your losses type of person.
I really am.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I risk does not scare me in the way that it does, or at least I don't find typical things risky.
Sure.
I think that I tend to go against the status quo in that
Love
sense.
Love it. Me too. Mm-hmm.
And so, I jumped back into work with food. And my first job kind of after my motherhood retirement was working for an emotional growth boarding school in a kitchen, which was really, really interesting.
Oh, I'm sure.
So interesting. If you have, thank God for Paris Hilton because she's given us like this.
Shocking.
It was one of those schools.
Really interesting.
It really was. So like we had Paris Hilton's, you know.
You just had like super rich kids whose parents sent
super
them
rich kids whose parents like misunderstood them. Like the nannies were no longer going to take care of, like, it was interesting that that school started at 13 years old, which is really when a nanny is going to be like, I'm out.
Well, absolutely. They're like, this is where the parents come in because this is just my day job.
Yeah, totally. And a nanny, like at that age, they don't need to be nannied. Right.
Right.
And then the parents are like, oh crap, we know nothing about our children.
Terrible.
And so that was kind of my conception of that space.
Gotcha.
I ended up working at one just in 2019 again. And what's funny is I had a whole different perspective as to why people were would enroll their kids then.
Yeah.
So we'll get there. So okay. I worked as a cook and then I was able to start line cooking and I loved line cooking. Line cooking was like my jam. It was so much fun. And then went from there to managing like a deli that had an open kitchen and we did a hot bar and it was essentially line cooking with bigger pans.
Love.
And it was natural foods. And I was able to utilize just really reinvigorate anything that came over from produce or, you know, like I had a lot of freedom there.
Yeah. That's fun.
And I go into, I'm an ideator, I guess. Like I've always, maybe it's because I struggle with routine and habit and like doing things the same every time, or maybe this is just the way my brain has always kind of worked, but I like to experiment with things. I like to, if you can't tell me why we're doing it this way, or if the why doesn't make a connection with me, I'm going to
do it a different way.
And I'm going to do it 100 different ways until I find a way that I think makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's always, how can I front load in order to make the end part easier? Because I know I have a hard time finishing things. Sure. And so if I don't front load it so that the end just happens automatically, I don't finish.
Right.
And so that kind of ties back in with like the content creation and starting as, and I don't remember if we were recording when we were having that chat, but I guess we'll get there.
Yeah.
So I ended up being a line cook and like in middle management. It ended up being a total of about 15 years all together. Cause I kind of started with food when I was about 15 years old.
Okay.
And then let's see, really solidly as a professional from like 2008 on.
Okay.
On until 2018. And I kind of like touched all the spaces. I don't feel like I had any sort of grand success as a cook, but I definitely got to experience a lot of different things. I got to open a restaurant, write a menu.
That's fun.
The entire time, and this is 100% in hindsight and kind of how I landed with startups. The entire time I would run across like these tech things that were just ridiculous that I knew would help. If they were managed correctly, would help kitchens, but you know, as like a working manager in a restaurant or food service sort of capacity, you actually spend more time cooking and managing on the floor than you have for paperwork. And so when you come back up and it's a real pain in the butt to deal with the Excel spreadsheet that your general manager gave to you to do, to like profit and loss and some of these things.
Yeah.
It's like, why is this so, like, this should be easier. Like, I don't know how, and I don't have the time to think about it, but I know for a fact, like, this should be easier.
Right.
And so kind of like dealing with that on and off throughout,
work experiences.
Yeah. Just like the little things, like they got at one of the restaurants, they just put in sort of a digital system and went from like writing the tickets to like entering the tickets on some sort of program. Mm-hmm. And then they get printed out. Well, the thing about all of these ticket printing programs is you end up with these tickets like this long. Okay. And you can't group them the way that we could train the servers to group them before. And then they're like heat activated. And if for some reason your ticket is like by a heat lamp or a grill, which they all are, they start to turn black from the bottom and
way
they curl. And so like, there's all these things that are like, not, you know, in
making
hindsight,
easy.
In hindsight, it's crystal clear. I can see what the problem is. And it's that disconnect between tech and boots on the ground. And so I actually got fired for my first time ever in 2018 in December, just before Christmas. And that was like, I was so blindsided. I think before I had always kind of, well, I'd always cut my losses just as I saw that they were becoming losses before. And that I didn't see at all. However, the mindset that I was in at that point, I was literally just grinding through, hoping that they would give me this, like, because they had talked about opening a burger joint that, well, you're from Spokane. Are you familiar with Incrediburger or the Gilded Unicorn?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I worked for their, I worked for the farmhouse, which was their Idaho partnership. Yeah. Okay. So
yeah, it's making sense. Okay.
Yeah, I love that you know that. That's so fun. So I was supposed to get the Incrediburger standpoint.
Okay.
Which was going to be super easy and super like
big. Yeah. Yeah.
And I really hated the farmhouse kitchen for a number of reasons. But I was just grinding through, waiting for that to happen, you know, but I was turning into the mean old lady in the kitchen, you know, like I was starting to get tired and
crabby
and like I was like, these kids eat it. You know, like just really like that sort of person. And then my daughter was really struggling at that point. That was when she had kind of gotten in trouble, and like all of a sudden I've got like school calling me every day and like all these things, and like just really overwhelmed. So I got fired, ironically, for trying to make up lost hours.
Okay. I hate that.
Oh, right. And then I still won my unemployment because people are terrible about communicating. And so the HR lady just stopped returning the unemployment phone calls. And so
they were like, yep, good for you.
Yep. And then I had gotten the job at another emotional growth boarding school in a different capacity, not as a designated cook, but as a house mom who cooks and hangs out with the girls and just kind of makes sure that they're supervised.
Okay.
And it was an interesting schedule because I would work 40 hours in 3 days. So I'd work 8 hours one on a Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday would be 16 hour days.
Okay.
And then my kids were going to school. So I had all this time all of a sudden to really start digging into some things. Well, my daughter had been suffering, and I hadn't really had time to like figure out what was going on. I knew that she wasn't just a disciplinary issue or that.
Sure.
You know, like to me, there was something there. And she had had appendicitis going into seventh grade. And she spent 21 days in Sacred Heart after spending like a week at Bonner General after her appendix had ruptured. Okay. And so like, I had some latent like guilt about how kind of that had rolled out. And then I had kind of heard along the way that long hospital stays can cause like trauma and like things like this, but I hadn't like been able, I didn't have the bandwidth or the time to really address it.
Yeah.
Ironically, I was much better at adulting when I was working a whole lot, because like I always had this sure. routine where I had to be, even though I was there for 14 hours a day.
Right.
It was easier to deal with things like paying car insurance because I was like always the same place all the time.
Totally. I get it.
For whatever reasons. I'm not diagnosed with ADHD, but I have that I might deal with some of those things. I definitely exhibit some symptoms of struggles that are related. But there again, I have a hard time saying it because it's such a catchphrase these days. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah, totally.
You know, it's just kind of trope down. So, and I don't even want it to be like a problem. I want it to just be a part of who I am, you know?
Embrace it.
You know? So I was able to invest some more time into what was going on with her and started trying to kind of work with her on figuring some of those things out, you know, mm-hmm. be able to stay more in touch with school, things of that nature. And so really started diving into just neuroscience in general, kind of like dabbling around in there.
Okay.
So that was December, January, February 22nd, 2019, my dad committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And my daughter had been really close to my dad. And so literally the first words out of my mouth when my brother told me was, how could he do this to Abby? Like, that's what I was
asking. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Because Abby was already struggling with the depression and stuff. And I didn't want her to, like, my biggest fear was that she would think that that was a good solution for her. And it was totally, totally different circumstances.
Right.
And I had even told my dad, you know, mm-hmm. if you do anything drastic, I'd make your choices, but like, you're going to be hurting somebody who doesn't have the sort of foundational human philosophies that I have to be able to kind of handle it.
The like emotional capacity / knowledge to have go through something like that.
Right. Right. And here's what was really interesting. So all that happened. I was gone from this new job for about a month and came back and started exhibiting what I know now is, you know, like just those trauma and like grief in a physical way.
Yeah.
But like, I wasn't sad.
Sure.
You know, mm-hmm. and so I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And I was, sorry about that.
Oh,
my notifications turned off, but apparently not my alarm. So I could not understand why I was having like this drastic personality shift and why I had this anxiety never really been my thing because I don't mess with risk the same way other people do. Like,
right.
So I don't have like this anxiety as much as I think a lot of people my age and maybe younger kind of struggle with on a really daily basis. But all of a sudden here it was. It popped up and like crippling, you know, like
terrible. I'm so sorry.
Anxiety. I am too, especially since I had really kind of dismissed a lot of my daughter's anxiety as like, oh, okay. Yes.
So you're fine. Yeah. Right.
You're nervous. Right. Like just breathe through it. It's not a big deal, but like to actually experience like,
it. Yeah.
And for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, I don't know. Like mm-hmm. I'd be doing something that I'd always done. Like I could not leave my house until all my laundry was full. Like it was until it was perfect. Until I was finished with everything at the house. So like I'd always be late for work because I had to finish. That is not the Carrie that existed before that.
Gotcha.
Like my dad mm-hmm. wanted me to be an entrepreneur. He always thought I should work for myself. I'm like, Dad, I'm not organized enough. I don't manage money good enough. Like there's a lot mm-hmm. of reasons why I should never, ever be in charge of myself. I have to work for somebody else. Right.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, like, it was like a switch flipped and like the amount of anxiety that I felt about leaving a towel unfolded before I went to work was like, I mean, it could throw me into a panic attack.
Yeah. Yeah.
People would come up behind me. I think one of the girls popped a balloon and I just about like, it was, I'd never been to war. Like I have jumpy about loud sounds, but like the amount of hormones, adrenaline, all the things that just kind of flooded my body in that moment, like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
So to the drawing board or to the Googles, if you will, and started looking up, and I was exhibiting like part trauma, part like complex grief, sort of behaviors.
Okay.
And I was like, how is this possible? Like, what is going on? And all the while people are telling me, you know, oh, everybody grieves differently. And I'm like, yeah, but we're all still human. Like there's something that happens biologically. You know, I had understood enough about dopamine and some of those things, just looking into my daughter's stuff, that, that I was like, okay, no, there's gotta be like some sort of common ground. So I just kind of kept digging past all of the kind of hyperbole.
Sure.
And kind of got back to first principles, if you will, like, okay, like, let's take all these assumptions out of here. Like, what do we actually know about our brains?
Right.
And just as like a, so when I was in Psych 101, the project that I did was supposed to be the right and left side of the brain and how like one is more creative and one is more logical. And after spending an entire semester looking that up, my report basically went, we don't know. Uh-huh. we can kind of figure out like what movements, but as far as like personality and emotion and creativity and some of those things, like they actually have no idea. Right. Like that's not a thing in neuroscience, right and left side of the brain, creative and logical. So back forward again, really had this notion that, you know, do we know now? Do we know now what happens in our brains emotionally?
Mm-hmm.
And when people would tell me like, well, you should, you know, are you exercising? And I'm like, well, exercising releases endorphins, which yes, make a person feel better, but so does tequila. Right. So why don't you tell me what I'm supposed to be thinking about
totally
when I'm running, or as my prefer, tequila-ing. Like I can do this. I just worked in a physical job my entire life. Like going for a run did not sound like a solution at all.
Yeah. Right.
Talking to people who were just like showing up for me and like saying the same things that were kind of running in my head over and over and over again, seemed like it was counterproductive as well. Like, I don't want to sit there and complain to the people who are showing up for me still, cause I want them to keep showing up for me.
Right. Right. I get that.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I really struggled because of that. And because I wasn't like doing these things that the emotional growth boarding school kind of felt like I should do to handle my grief. Mm-hmm. They actually, and they won't admit it, but they waited precisely 6 months from the time that I came back to work, like almost to the day. And then they fired me too.
Wow.
So classic. I had gotten fired twice. Fired, dad died, fired again.
Yeah. That's a lot.
It was a lot. It was a lot. And it nearly broke me.
I'm sure.
So let's see, I'd gotten fired in July. I think I spent most of August kind of just in a dark little hole. Watching Star Trek reruns because I'm that cool. Actually, and specifically Star Trek Voyager, I'm not even like cool among them, okay? Like, I don't even like the OG stuff that like... I like Star Trek Voyager. So I watched that entire like 12 season, 8 season, whatever it is.
That's awesome.
And then like, you know, with my trusty bottle of tequila.
Right.
You know, we all have coping mechanisms.
Yes, we do. Yeah, that was the right one for you.
It kept me breathing, you know, and technically speaking, tequila is an upper, not a downer, which makes it amongst alcohols. So like I was actually helping myself. Thank you very much. I had tried like therapy and stuff too, but I ended up quitting that because all I would do is look for the terrible things and save them all week to tell my therapist. And it's not that therapy is bad, but I was not a good candidate for that style of therapy. If I had been in some sort of week-long intensive, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
That would have been more beneficial for me. Like, I don't like dragging things out. You know,
rip the band-aid off.
Oh, once and move the fuck on.
Yeah.
So I remember. So somewhere during that period of time, I had come across a life coach who had helped me with that anxiety that I had spoke of. And just the way that I came across her was just, it was so succinct. It was so easy. And it gave me immediate help right in the moment.
Yep. Okay.
You know, it wasn't about like trying to take time out from my daughter when we were yelling at each other. Like, it gave me tools to use and not then have to withdraw.
Yeah. Yep. Love that.
And that's so important. Like, do you know how hard it is in most like conflict situations to be like, I think we need to go to our corners for 5 minutes and then revisit this.
Totally.
Like that, I feel like that's how life actually works.
Right.
When we're getting really upset about things. And, yeah. And that's any kind of like really intense, like
emotional situation.
Emotional situation, you know? And so I had used my last paycheck to sign up for her program, but then laid in bed for like the first 3 weeks, right? Because that is really typical of humans. Like, we find this thing that can help us, but then doing the action.
And then you just push away from it. Yeah, of course.
It's like, oh my gosh, there's something that can help me. Oh, I need to be miserable just a little bit longer.
You know, let me sit in my misery.
Right. Well, we're so, like, our brains are so programmed to, like, focus on that negative all the time. And
yeah,
I was just exhausted. Like decision fatigue, empathy fatigue, like all the fatigues and all the burnouts, and then the events, the series of unfortunate events.
Really. Yes.
So I had this one day, I guess it was probably late August of 2019, and I was traveling from bed to bathroom, and there's a mirror on the way. And I stopped and I looked in the mirror and I didn't recognize my face. It was the weirdest thing. Okay. And I don't mean like I, you know, you get used to kind of how your little muscles are. How you look, like where you're like, I constantly have like these kind of smile lines and I'm constantly always like in a partial smile. Like it's just,
sure.
It's just kind of how my face settles. You know, some people have resting bitch face. I have like resting immune face.
Okay.
Like it's sometimes I look amused during inappropriate times, but
shit. Right.
So looking at myself in the mirror and just seeing like how it was like my face had melted, you know, like it was just, it was like gravity had like pulled everything down and like, I could not get the smile back.
Sure.
And it was like this weird millisecond where I was like, oh my God, this is the face I'm gonna have to look at for the rest of my life.
Mm.
Like if I don't do something about this right now, this is the face
gonna be permanent. Yeah.
Right. You know, my face is gonna stick like this.
Right.
I mean, it's really like one of those instances. Yeah, it was. It was gonna stick like that. So like in that moment, I was like, well, I have like only a few choices here. You know, like I can start trying to work on something to feel better. I can lay in bed until somebody tells me I need to work on something to feel better. So like just kind of prolonging that, or I can commit suicide, or I can do the thing that, you know, and I can just take myself out of the equation now. And like, that was the first time I had ever like heard that thought so clearly in my head. And also the first time that I had never seen any sort of potential future for myself.
I could not at the end of the tunnel.
It wasn't even, I didn't even have anything that I wanted. Like there was no light that I wanted at the end of the tunnel at that moment.
Like my
give a fuck was so broken that I wasn't even looking for the damn light.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a lot. That's dark.
It was. And it was dark, but also like such a short little period of time. Like, amazing. Yeah, I was depressed before. But like that moment was so, it was so intense that I can't even really relate it to anything else in my life, because it was just like, because our brain doesn't think one thing at a time, right? It was like all these things like simultaneously. It takes longer to tell you about it than it does for me to be able to like experience it.
Sure.
So I went and I smoke in my bathroom. So I went and I smoked and I was like, okay, I have this program. I love self, like I love this concept of how she does self-coaching. I really enjoy it. And I need to just go like her introductory sequence lasts about, I think, 6 weeks. I said, I need to go do that. because that's all I'm going to be able to afford anyways.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to have to cancel her $100 a month to be a part of her program. But I need to just like do that. And I need to focus only on that.
Right.
And I need to not worry about my future. And I need to not do any, I just need to do the thing that she started us with. And so it's all about your thoughts and circumstances and feelings and actions and results and kind of separating all of that out and taking a look at it. Her particular program, she starts really intensively in this figuring out the difference between a circumstance, a thought, and describing these feeling sensations in your body and naming it. And there's really no right or wrong way to do it, but there's definitely a more granular way to get there with this program. And it did, and I stayed in that space at the top half of the model is what it's called, the model, for a really long time. And really what I ended up doing is peeling back, like we layer our emotions. Like you get anxious about anxiety. Like, oh my God, if I go out and if I have social anxiety and I go to this party, I'm going to be anxious. And you start getting anxious then, you know, so it's like your thoughts that generate these feelings inside of your body, hormones, like all these things happen. But then also the very worst emotions, they're really only going to last for about 3.5 minutes because that's how long it takes for your body to process these hormones.
Sure.
And then it'll flush it out and it might start again.
Okay.
But it's knowing what that is.
Right.
And understanding that's so natural and that it's not going to kill you. And like, it took me weeks to get to this point where like I could sit and be ashamed and realize that I wanted to react to this shame.
Mm-hmm.
But that actually, if I just kind of sat and felt it or maybe acted like in a different way than I had to try and avoid that feeling before.
Okay.
I was getting different results, but for me at that point, results were different, like thoughts and ideas about what life is, you know, because I really started, that's really when I broke through and started like being able to feel the loss of my dad, but then also feel the love from him that I had.
That's beautiful.
People don't give us emotions. They don't give us love.
Right.
We have thoughts that cause it within our body, but they don't actually like, it doesn't get sent over through the waves of, you know, it's not delivered via Wi-Fi.
Totally.
and so like a lot of times the love that we feel for somebody is us just redeciding to love them. And seeing the parts that we love and understanding, like to me, unconditional love is understanding that if we change any part of that person, they won't be the same person that we love.
Right.
If they organically change themselves, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Right. To watch that and witness that and just let that happen. And then like that made me kind of realize where I stood with my relationships. And so like all of this was such a, like a relationship centric thing and all the while still kind of like helping my daughter. And so one day in October, I was sitting and I was listening to the teacher of the first person that I had come across life coaching with. Her name is Brooke Castillo and she has this whole vertical called the Life Coach School.
Okay.
And she started from, she's got a crazy story. So cool. But I had finished all the podcasts from Cara, the first lady I'd found. And I was going through all of Brooke's podcasts and she had like 300 or something of them at the time.
Wow. Okay.
Right. And I get obsessive when I just make a decision. And so like since August, I had been obsessively listening and just ingesting all of this
soaking
material.
soaking it in
like a sponge surrounding the model and the life coach school and that coaching ecosystem. And she had said, you know, I realized one day that I could put anything in the result line and I can make it happen. And I was like, what? She's like, if you work backwards from the result line, you can make, you know, like you can solve to figure out what you need to be thinking, what circumstances you need to be in, what emotions you want to have, like, and that equals what actions you take, which will end up in that result.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? You know,
Right.
But then like really started thinking about it. And at this point I was struggling turning in applications because I wasn't going to go back to a restaurant. My unemployment was running out. Mm-hmm. Anywhere else, they weren't going to accept me in management and retail. So I kind of had to start like at the bottom again. I didn't have an education. I didn't like, even if I had an education, I couldn't really go anywhere yet.
Okay.
You know, like I couldn't be in a different location yet. And I was like, what if I put like, I want to work from my computer for the rest of my life in my result line. What does that look like? And then I started like working myself backwards. I was like, well, okay. So like people make money on podcasts. Like, okay. They don't have, you know, first, do they have a scholarship for the life coach school? No. Can I get scholarships for the life coach school? No. You know, so like I started on like that really kind of conventional, I need to be certified to be able to be a life coach sort of thing. And life coaching made sense because it was the first thing that made sense that I could do from my computer. That didn't seem like a weird get rich quick scheme. It seemed like I could control it, all of these things. And so like, I just kind of started that process and started working backwards and declared myself a life coach January 21st, 2020.
Wow.
You know, just a few months before everybody cousin jumped online, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And I like hired a branding coach. And she was phenomenal as far as the information that she was able to provide. Mm-hmm. But again, it was that, you know, consistency. Pick one platform and specialize in that and show up there and be, you know, talk to your audience. And well, who's my audience? Well, they're the people that are just a few steps behind you and what you're learning. Mm-hmm. And like, it's very typical advice across the board in that particular industry or in like that content creating, coaching, building courses. I mean, I hate to stereotype this, but like the classic kind of like middle class white American female. I would have ended up being another coach to those, which is why like I was really resistant to that because I'm like, first of all, I don't feel middle class. I might be white, but I don't feel like I have all of the privilege that comes along with that because of my income. And the way I was brought up, like I can't relate to somebody who's trying to step out of corporate America. I grew up in the woods without a toilet. And so like really, like it was just really hard for me to find that voice in content with the grief. And then I just kind of went like general life coaching. And then, you know, COVID kind of hit and I tried a couple of things like experimenting. If you're an entrepreneur, that's what you do. Of course, I still had this notion that I was doing it wrong, even though like hindsight's always 20/20. I was doing it right for me. And, you know, but really just went through these cycles of feeling like I wasn't sticking to it enough to like, let it work. And then that maybe I was losing the support of my friends and family and like, you know, just all these things. And then August happened and that's when we lost, Jordy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was just a whole nother like weird trip. And, you know, well, here we are in 2021.
Mm-hmm. Almost 2022.
And I'm thinking, and I'm trying to remember exactly when it was that I started getting excited about tech startups and NFTs and blockchain and Bitcoin and all of those things. And it was during one of those moments where I was feeling really stuck with like, how am I, you know, who I think I've probably spent about 18 months asking myself, who do I serve? Why? And how? Who do I serve? Why? And how? I have a bazillion like workbooks that I've done trying to discover my audience, trying to work through it, all these different approaches to try and like nail down your audience. And then like all of them, like I'd start on it and then I'd be like, God, this just doesn't feel right. And then I would like, okay, does it not feel right because it's not right for me? Or does it not feel right because I don't like instituting sort of these routines or these habits that really should be, you know, like I was shooting on myself.
Yeah.
And kept coming back around to like, I'm just not interested in the people who are going to benefit from consistently writing this content. Like they're great people, but I just felt so like they were so served.
Okay.
And they were so specifically served and they could really like pick from anybody. And it was just, it came down to personality. And like, and then when I realized it came down to personality, I was like, I don't even know if I know who I am. So how am I going to serve an audience at all? You know, if we're talking about like some of those intangible things that are communicated through content, I don't even know who that is, you know? Right. And I'd have these big thoughts in my head and then I try to put them down on paper and they'd come out and I'd reread it. Sometimes I'd even post it, you know, but then I'd reread it and I'd be like, when did I become like a Labor Day furniture salesman? You know, I'm like, this is not right. And people would be like, oh, keep doing it. You'll get better. I'm like, no, I don't like it. I'm not going to get better at something I hate. And so just probably in one of those moments where I think I had heard about NFTs through, I don't even remember the path. Kind of an obtuse path, but I started really kind of getting excited about things like Bitcoin. Once I had this time, so I started like digging into the history of our money, and history was really one of those places that I immediately went to, just kind of all along the way. You have to understand, like, I didn't watch TV for probably, I still have a hard time finishing TV since that time. I got out of bed in August of 2019, like watching things was way overstimulating for me. So it was all about the podcast, all about the podcast. And they were really ramping up. And then I was finding ones that had been around for like since 2015 and stuff. And so just when I'd get tired of business stuff or life coaching stuff, I would switch to something else. One of those times it happened to be like about fiat money and this stuff called Bitcoin and like the NFTs. Like I kind of discovered them all together in the blockchain. And for me, like I could immediately see that they were different sort of use cases. And what's really interesting is I don't think even back then very many people were talking about it as like being different use cases or really having like a full grasp of it. It definitely wasn't anywhere mainstream. It was still kind of obtuse. And so that had to be at some point during 2020 in the summer-ish maybe.
Okay.
Everything started happening so quickly at that point, like the amount of change that I started like to really have, in that sense of finding myself again, or deciding myself. I don't even want to say like finding myself, just like deciding who I wanted to show up as, because I'd never really decided before. It always been like this default risk mitigation sort of, identity that I'd had for a really long time. Really long time. I think like elementary school is what I like ended up kind of peeling back. And I was like, wow, this is fascinating. And then I started like looking into code writing. And then I started like, I came across NFX, which is a venture capital, but like they have just great philosophy of how like humans collect in their different groups. And that is something that is always fascinating. Like what makes the popular kids popular? You know, cause I was never one of them. But like, to me, I see like they put off this air of like, not really giving a shit. And I'm like, well, is that what you have to do? Like not get too excited about stuff. And then like, you see things like the Howard Dean incidents where like, he pretty much got like 86 from a presidential campaign because he was like, woo.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, oh my God, I can't believe he did that. And I'm like, I actually don't see anything wrong with it. I actually loved it. You know what I mean? Like, what am I not getting about humans here? And so, where was I going? I don't remember. Anyway, so I get really excited about blockchain and like all these things. And then I'm learning about these different sort of spaces with tech. And mm-hmm. I'm starting to understand, like, there's like this startup culture, if you will.
Okay. And, yeah.
And like, there's this whole like finance thing and like all of this stuff. And so then I started like digging into code writing, and like, most people would be like, oh, well, I think I want to learn how to write code. And so then they'd go and try and learn to write code. Right. And for me, it was like, I wonder what it's like to learn how to write code.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So like, I dig into like the people who are doing it already. And because I'm such an auditory person at that point, like just podcasts, you know, listening to people talk about coding, like Code Newbies is a mm-hmm. podcast that I came across, and just listening to people kind of work through, and all these different people who have, you know, been coding since the mid-90s, and like just that whole evolution. And then finally understanding that writing code isn't one language, it's like all of these things, and that it's actually moving so fast that nobody really has anything memorized. It's just about mm-hmm. knowing where to find your tools. And like, to me, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so like the type of mentality I've had my whole life.
Yep.
I can't write the code, but I have this mentality, this experimentation, this idea that there's no right or wrong way. It's like a combination of things to get a mm-hmm. result.
Sure.
And the result can be judged as beneficial or not, but how you put it together is yours.
Yeah.
Exclusively.
And it's just, I love that.
I've never really experienced that. Even in, you would think in kitchens that would be
right,
but it wasn't. Like I could get stuff done. Like I've made chili in a smoker because like all mm-hmm. the burners were occupied, and it was really, really like busy, and like the chili needed to get made, you know?
Right.
The smoker was the only source of heat that wasn't being used. So off we went.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was so unheard of even in kitchens. And all of a sudden I'm like, wow, look, there's this space where it's just filled with people.
Mm-hmm.
Who like are okay with this sort of approach, you know, this
you found your little niche.
I found my people.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, and then coming to this space with a lot of these life coaching foundations. And then also turns out I'm realizing as I work with Mike.
Yeah.
And Sarah with Assist.
Yeah.
Because they are my beta. They are my beta.
Love.
And I'm like, wow, you know, like I know a lot more about pitching to VC, and I've heard a lot more pitches, and I've seen a lot more, and I've dug into that a lot deeper than they have, mm-hmm. which I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think they are exactly where they need to be and focusing on exactly what they need to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
But I have all this like knowledge I can share, all
right.
this perspectives that they don't have the time, but I put all this time and deep dives in, and I have like this system of researching things now that like mm-hmm. I've much faster than it was before, and I have this way of making judgment calls, knowing like just from listening to another person talk about what they're building, I get a good sense of like how I can use that information to help say Sarah and Mike.
Yep.
I've got like a pattern recognition thing, and I haven't quite figured all that out yet, but like I know things before they happen trend wise.
Okay.
Which is weird for, like, it's hard for me to even say that with like,
no, I get it.
Without feeling like a little bit of an imposter, because I'm like, totally, how the hell do I do that? How do I do that? I don't know how I do that yet. I'm not scalable yet. I am not a repeatable process yet. And so I'm totally okay with just, you know, taking on Mike and Sarah as a beta.
Yeah.
And working with them for 3 months before I even take anybody else on.
Totally. Totally.
But that's my business.
Yeah.
Yep. Long story longer. What am I? I am a coach. I'm a consultant. And I really help startups. And at any phase, I feel like, but I really want to focus on those like pre-funded, still bootstrapping, still kind of finding themselves and their voice through this thing that they want to build.
Yeah, I love it. And you're there to help them build it.
And I'm there to help them know what it is that they actually want.
Yeah.
And what it is that they're actually going after.
Yeah.
And that ties in like, I love that space because I think it's about really dialing in that self-leadership and that self-awareness and those building blocks of process that you need to be able to build processes in business later.
Yeah.
But really entering those stages with deep intentionality makes it so that a founder, co-founder, or even like a three-way, because I think three for a tech startup is really, in my opinion, if you have the right three,
you can do it.
The best way to go. The best way to go. You're gonna build the fastest, you're gonna scale the fastest, and you're gonna end up with the highest quality.
Okay.
Of everything. Yep. Provided those three people are using the same language when it comes to emotions, when it comes to conflict, when it comes to interactions.
Okay.
And so that is so important to me.
Yeah.
To help people get to that point. And I use a little bit of everything to get there.
Wow.
You know?
Okay. Yep. So Mike and Sarah, and for those people listening who don't know who Mike and Sarah are, they are the owners of the Assist app, and they, you know, I work with them as their podcast host. Carrie is now working with them behind the scenes as well, to just pretty much build up their brand, build up. That's what one of the things I'm doing is helping them build up their media sphere brand. But what do you have to do, Carrie, with like, or what do you have to say, you know, to people who might be listening, like entrepreneurs thinking about a startup in a startup who are thinking about hiring, you know, or working with someone like you, like, but aren't sure if that's right for them?
I would say, first of all, hire me. No,
call me.
I really will do one-off conversations. 100% open to that. Some people would call them consults. I'm going to use them as my lead product. There's going to be a nominal fee for them, but it's not going to be a full-on coaching fee.
Sure.
I want to make it affordable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up for negotiation. Kind of depends, but. It's really looking at like where you're at, and figuring out maybe a couple of resources that can help solidify that so that you know what you're asking for.
Right.
As humans, especially when we're building something that we've never done before and we're not really sure, like you don't know the search terms to put in. Right.
Right. Right.
And so, I would tell somebody who is feeling kind of like they have a problem, but they can't articulate what the problem is, to just take like maybe a whole day to look at their why.
Okay.
That's good. So like, why did I think this was a good idea? What result do I want? Mm-hmm. So it's like an algebra problem. You've got like the initial information, and then you have like the after the equal sign sort of answer, right? There's all kind of holes along the way. Sure. And if I kind of fill in those holes, you want to set like a mission and a vision. And I think that those need to be tangible and they need to be strategic. No Miss America, like,
I just want world peace. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you have to get really, really like as granular as you can.
Get nitty gritty with it.
Yeah. And really keep revisiting it. Like for me, I want to help 100 entrepreneurs.
I love that.
Enter into funding, feeling really confident that no matter what they feel pressured to do as they kind of enter like the more frameworked portion of that ecosystem, they can stand behind what they love. And then to understand when to say no, in the startup community, it's so hard to say no to scaling. You know, you just want to follow that
grow,
momentum.
Grow. Yeah.
But I think that in order for that bubble not to burst, you have to say no and move your momentum in a certain way. Right. There was a story from Eve. Eve was a startup that did direct sales betting. And I don't remember what podcast it was on, but the co-founder really their initial success. And then everybody's like, well, you should do this and we should do that. And he said yes to all of it. And then like at one point, like ended up literally having a breakdown
It's because, just too much.
Well, right. And then too much and then failure.
Right. Cannot compute.
Right, right. And we had kind of talked about this, I think, before we turned the recording on, but the idea of doing one thing really well.
Yes. Yep.
But then trying to like branch out. And I think that it's a good idea to branch out. Don't get me wrong. I don't think you should do one thing really well for the rest of your life. But I think that trying to, I guess, kind of like band-aid other things onto that momentum might be mm-hmm. a mistake. I think knowing that you have a team that can grow stuff like that, that's the magic.
Right.
Don't get attached to the one thing. Get attached to the team. So grow that team with intentionality. Another number one place that startups tend to break down is when they go from their three and they start hiring.
Sure.
There is really no articulation over who's going to do what.
Okay.
How that branches out, how that organization is going to start playing out in structure.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people think they'll just deal with it when they get there. And the problem is when they get there, there's all these other pressures. So they're mm-hmm. starting to get all these users and then sure. they owe all this money to a VC. And then like,
it's just like a snowball of shit. Like it's like,
right. And if you're going to build a snowball,
mm-hmm.
You best be prepared,
honey.
You should pick what hill you roll it down.
Right.
What hill you roll it down and how much you, it's that really fine line of knowing that this is no longer yours.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's out into the world now. Yeah. Yep.
And I love Sarah and Mike because I think that at this point of this recording, mm-hmm. They're at this point where they've got the snowball
mm-hmm.
and it's working.
Yeah.
Things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so exciting.
Yeah.
But they're at this point where they need to make these structural decisions.
Sure.
And I'm really confident that they're going to make the best ones for them.
Yeah. They're great.
But watching them, like this is the point where they change who they are.
Yep. This is like the point of the movie where like the drama comes in, but it's like the rise of the characters, you know?
Right. Like they might be hitting a little point of struggle here in the future, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. It's, to me, like I have no problem saying that because I think it's the art and the creativity of business.
Well, it's like you go through it, you know?
Yeah. You have to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to change everything. If you're going to build something that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, it's not easy. And you can't expect it to be, you know.
It shouldn't. And it should change you.
Yes.
If what you're building doesn't change you.
Yeah.
You might want to take a look at that why again.
Yeah.
And you might want to really take some time understanding yourself. Because if it doesn't change you, what's the point?
That's deep. Carrie, that is deep. Wow.
So, I mean, if I hadn't had my journey and been changed so much over the last 2 years,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be so excited about the future.
Yeah. Yeah. My last question for you, Carrie, is, you know, you have been through this whole journey yourself, like that we talked about, and now you're helping other people on their journey, but I still can, like, I consider you an entrepreneur just as an outsider looking in, you know? So what advice can you leave all of the entrepreneurs with in terms of like what worked for you when like the going got rough?
I think I would relate it back to my content journey. I know that content is important. Mm-hmm. And now I'm finally excited about writing it.
Sure.
If you feel like you're forcing yourself to do something that maybe you've been advised to do, and that even you see evidence of that thing working, if you did it that way, take a step back and remind yourself that it's that next milestone that you're after. and beating yourself up to get to that milestone in a known way is a waste of your energy.
Yeah.
Understand that though the person advising you might not be wrong, and my brand coach was not wrong about consistency and showing up and having a, you know, like a reliable voice in a space. But really look at why you can't do that. And don't consider it a defect. Look at it with curiosity. You can't be anxious and you can't be judgmental when you're curious.
Right. You need to give yourself that grace.
Right. But that doesn't mean stop moving.
Right.
Keep moving. Move in some direction. The entire time I was looking for my audience, I was still really based around learning about technology and computers because I was going to work for my computer. I was really engaged with looking at marketing, which is how I found behavioral science. Finding behavioral science, finding and learning about tech positions in general is how I realized I've actually been a design thinker my entire life. And it's so cool to have like this talent and all of a sudden like, hey, there's actually a name for it. And some people go to school for a really long time to learn how to be like this. And and like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting that, that I can actually call myself a design thinker.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always been one.
Yep.
And
you just stepping into it. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It exists in the world. So design thinking is so huge. Always start with behavior. Always start with emotion. Always start with language and build whatever you're building from there. So if you're not comfortable with the language, if you, you know, the content, if you're not comfortable with some of those things, or you find yourself trying to skip over those things, ask yourself why. Why am I not resonating with this language? Why does it feel so hard? Because those things shouldn't be hard. There's lots of hard things ahead of you.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us today. Like, it was a pleasure. And I know I'm taking away a ton and everyone listening is going to as well. So we just really appreciate you for coming on the Assist podcast.
Well, and I just appreciate being able to kind of tell my story in its fullness. Because I've told my story a couple other times, but not from this perspective, right?
Yay. Yeah, no, I'm so happy to hear that. And like, it's exciting to see, you know, we'll have you on again, you know, after your beta clients, when you have more clients, and we'll see how it's going for you. So I'm, again, just super thankful.
Yeah. And I'm so excited. I hope that we stay in touch for sure. And I think we'll check in with each other regularly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Carrie, thank you so, so much again for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Carrie Silverman. She is so wise, so funny. She's just been great talking about all the things that led her up to now and what she's doing now and what she plans to do in the future. So we will definitely be having Carrie back on the Assist podcast. As we head into Christmas, we want to wish you guys a Merry, Merry Christmas. And as always, if you haven't downloaded the Assist app, go ahead and do so or head to theassistapp.com. We'll see you soon.